Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Osiris.
Sir. We're ready. We're ready to go. We got our water here. We're hydrating. Hey, everybody. As you can tell, we are not at the Sphere. Physically or spiritually.
I flew home this morning. And I'm flying back after this.
I'm in a room with a lot of 90-degree angles around me. It's a little, I feel trapped.
Well, guys, we have to talk about this. I just want to say, again, we did not go to the concert. But I think that's not almost all the concerts we talk about on this show we did not go to. So, you know, that's not really what we do. We kind of, I mean, sometimes we do. I don't know.
It might be good to try to get somebody who went for like the overall run recap. But look, if we were at the concert,
I have in mind,
we wouldn't
Jonathan.
Be doing this right now. We'd be napping. Oh, I know you're way ahead of me. We'd be napping Vegas right now.
We would be napping. Actually, we might be sitting next to a pool drinking a Bloody Mary. You never know.
Maybe I might be winning millions at the blackjack table. Don't underestimate me.
I will say that we have two members of our broader team there, Matt and Brad, and I think one of them would be willing to come on. They both like talking
about probably a few stuff. Other intrepid reporters if we you know need to cast a net. So we'll get.
I will
word.
Say that I got hit up at the Eggy Show a month ago at Ardmore by someone who lives in Philly and said, if you need someone, let me know. So people have been weighing in and offering their services for months. So, but I do think, guys, this was, I don't know what you guys think overall. Let's talk about like the kind of expectations going in, but, oh, good question. Where the hell is Megan? I guess everyone's going to leave because Megan's not here. Megan is absent.
Does anybody ask that when I'm not here? I doubt it.
Megan's all right. Megan's on the IL. She should be back by the Megan should be back by the
recap.
Main recap. She's you know, this is a mid-season injury. It happens to everyone. We're just this is what do they call
it's
it?
It's a long year
in the NBA. It's a long season, and this is load management, if you will.
Well,
RJ, I know you want to. You have a strict program, but I want to keep us on track by going off track and say that, you know, there are a lot of people who would like to come on the show and tell us about their experience at Sphere, but I know we can't have them all on, but we do have a place where they could leave us a voicemail, I think, and maybe they should do that.
So smart. 484-416-0488. That's such a genius comment, Jonathan. Thank you.
Give us a ring.
Incredible.
I do think, guys, this is a... Okay, first of all, it's called Sphere, not The Sphere. You don't want James Dolan coming after you, so just, you know, there's no the.
I dare him just to come after me.
You see how his basketball team performs? You should see the effectiveness of him.
Well, We're about to see starting.
We're tomorrow. About to see. I'm predicting starting not tomorrow. Fun things for my New York Knicks friends out there.
Well, that would mean fun things for me. So
potentially.
Great. Okay. Sorry. Do you guys think, I feel like every fish show has there's even a podcast by our friend Brian called Attendance Bias. Every fish show is a kind of a had to be there kind of situation, but I feel like these are like the ultimate, you had to be there. Like I'm getting reports from people, my friends who were there, and it's like basically everyone's like, this was amazing and I can't even really explain it yet.
I'm sure I could not objectively report on the show in any way if I had been there. I also know that by not being in there, I can only really talk about the music and very much about the webcast, which is not the same as the visual. And so, yeah, know that when I speak about this show, it has nothing to do with what it's like to be in that weird room with the giant screen.
That's fair. We will do that later with people who are there. Can I just read a comment from our text from my friend Drew, who you guys know. He said, I can't even describe how the sound moves around the venue. It feels like the whole room is moving. The webcast can't do it justice. So I feel like there's like the 4D element that we just, you know, are not going to get from the webcast, but we do get a lot of good music. I thought watching the visuals on the webcast was pretty fun and pretty different. I mean, pretty amazing, actually. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I find myself, I webcast every show that I'm not at. I love fish webcasts. It's there's like 45 of them a year. I can book that into my schedule. We, you know, make dinner outside on the patio and we webcast. The kids run around and they dance. We hang out in the living room and webcast. Like, it's a great annual 45 times a year type of event for us. It's like watching baseball for me.
Yeah.
Usually when I'm webcasting a show, Jonathan and I have talked about this a few times. Like, I'm reading a book while I'm also webcasting. I'm not usually like focused on, I've seen the band. I know what they look like. If they're in the middle of a deep jam, I want to see what's going on. What's the kind of nonverbal communication happening on stage? If there's a beautiful sunset because it's an outdoor venue, I want to check on that. But like, there's a lot of time where I'm folding laundry or reading a book or cooking dinner while the webcast is playing. Last night was one of those shows where I felt like the entire time I had to be sitting there with zero distractions, watching the show. And you're absolutely right. Like, the first time they had the camera down on the floor showing like the visuals going over people's heads, I was just like, there's no way to interpret this from this screen. Like that, like, it looks weird. It feels weird, but I can't even imagine what this is like in the room. But it did give off, especially throughout the second set, which I think we'll talk about this as the show evolved, the visuals really took over in a big way. It didn't feel like they were testing the waters in any manner. It felt completely immersive. The visuals felt a huge part of the song and of the jams. Once you got to that point in time, I was so locked in, and I was watching everything aside from the moments that I fell asleep because it's late and I have little kids, but like, I was locked in as much as you possibly could be at 12:30 at night.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com/VIP/helpingfriendly. That's DistroKid with a capital K, .com/VIP/helpingfriendly for a special offer. Thanks, DistroKid.
I somehow stayed awake for that whole thing, but I agree, you know, with you, Brian, that and I'm on the East Coast. I'm not only one time zone away.
I know you're amazing
all the way out here, and
What time did you go to sleep, Jonathan?
By chance, I took the day off today. So, okay.
But what time did you fall asleep?
It was 3:30 when I came upstairs to like brush my teeth, something like that. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It was so late. It was holy so crap. Insane. So late. It was like when they play a so Halloween long. Show.
Right, right. So, but back more to the original question, you know, I agree. The visuals, you can't comprehend what they must be seeing. There were a couple times when I could imagine that this is probably really bonkers or amazing, like the visuals during Antelope, where they're just doing the points of light and geometric patterns. So cool. And I was like, they're messing with people with this. It's about time. Because the very beginning, they were taking it kind of easy on everybody, going a little more Qbert. And then wow. But again, it's small, flat screen here in my house. It is just not the same. I would say a lot of people I saw post about it said, more wide shots. I know what Paige looks like.
It does seem like there is a lot of like.
Interpret that. How are you like?
There's a lot of Trey guitar face, and you're like, but I think that's fair. But I do think from even when you see Trey, you can still see like,
right?
You know, 40% of this like gigantic screen. I don't think it's like totally fair to say that, but why not just keep it? I have a friend Andy who watches the show I've known since elementary school. His whole thing with Fish Webcast is like, why don't they just have the view of the stage with the lights? Like, that's the view that everyone wants to see.
Right.
So why don't they do that? I mean, unless 90% of the show.
Fishman walks up with the vacuum. Okay, give us a good shot of that. That's cool. Yeah. Or, you know, the guitar comes out or, you know, something.
Really like the shot that they have on like the little moving track that goes side mic. You know, and it kind of like zooms in and zooms out when they're jamming. It gets all four of them. That's one of the shots I really dig. But I'm there with you guys. Like, you kind of want to just like. I remember when they put out those 1995 and 1997 videos back in like the early 2000s. They put out like 12/195, and it's literally just from the soundboard. That's all you get, and that's all you really want. Yeah, it's perfect.
True. Yeah, I like that little side cam too. It kind of reminds me of when I sit kind of close behind the stage, which if anybody's wondering, that's why I'm not at Sphere, because there's no behind the stage seating.
There's no behind the stage. Yeah, that's a good point.
It just doesn't work for me.
So, okay, let's talk about going into this, because I didn't do probably as much research as other people, but I didn't realize that there would be no amps, none of the cabinets. There's nothing. Like, you see the pre-show and it's just, so for Trey, like, does that mean that the Leslie is like not available, or does that just mean that it's like hooked up in a different way?
It's all off stage.
So it's there. It's not like it's, it's there. Okay. I thought maybe it was like in the system somewhere, but the equipment is there.
The equipment is just, it's off stage somewhere. I couldn't tell you if it's downstairs, out back, or what. It's just not on the stage. Same for like Paige's Leslie. And Paige has no speakers. Mike has no cabinets. Trey doesn't have, the only real stage noise is the drums, and that's why they have those baffles around Fishman and the piano.
Yeah.
And then
and they, and they did
strings.
Have wedges though.
Those were those wedges. Are
or were those
are not wedges. Those are teleprompters.
Oh, those are the teleprompters. Yeah,
because they're using in-ears.
Right. Okay. Okay, so going into this, I saw that picture and I was like, oh, wow, this is way different than I was thinking of. What were you guys thinking in terms of expectations or just what you were kind of like expecting coming into the run?
So I made a bold prediction coming out of Mexico based on the jamming and based on the idea that this venue is so unique and the, you know, overall setup with the visuals plus everything we're talking about from a gear standpoint, like how do you recreate a standard in quotes fish show in this environment? I kind of figured based off of the way that they played in Mexico, that was treated as almost a sound check. I'd heard that they were having issues getting into the sphere for any sort of pre-run sound checks. That basically made Mexico be like, what do we do when we just have nothing holding us back and we literally just have to create music a la the drive-in jam, the tower jam. So I kind of thought they were going to go into this and try to recreate what a fish show would be like more through improv. When they went right into Everything's Right, I was like, okay, we're getting a fish show within this environment, which I think ultimately works. It kind of threw me off a little bit because like you're saying, RJ, that picture that I got from my buddy who was in the show of the stage, it just doesn't look like a normal fish show. The venue doesn't look normal. The webcast comes on and you just see blues and then pinks like fading onto the crowd. The actual venue looks completely different from any venue we've seen them in. I found, and we'll go into this, but like as they got into the show, they kind of found this sweet spot. I think it was probably really challenging from a technical standpoint to play a structured fish show within this environment with the visuals behind them. And I felt like it took them a couple of songs to really get situated and find that sweet spot of like, we can stretch things out. The visuals will just do their thing. And also, you know, we're bringing you guys what you expect from fish on a night to night basis.
Jonathan, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So, I kind of just almost slightly disagree with your last point, but I'm going to save that for when we talk about the first set and just talk about expectations here, which is that I strive to have none because I'm happier when I walk in without expectations. I expected Fish would play like Fish, which right now is a really good band. Like Mexico was, as you said, Brian, was great and they're playing really well. I expected them to take that and then add to it this production thing that can only happen in this one place. And I think that pretty much held up. I was happy with the music and I was happy with the production, although I really didn't know what that would look like other than, you know, some of the hints, or maybe they're not hints, the things that Trey told us we wouldn't be seeing in the interviews recently, like we wouldn't be seeing any, like, you know, 500 foot Trey Anastasio rock guitar god images on the screen. And we didn't. I like how they played with that idea a little bit with the TVs, but
yeah, only 100 foot tall shadows of Trey repeated.
No, it was 10 foot ones. No,
I liked how during Fluffhead they had this like smearing of lights and it had, that was like, that had the shadows and it was almost like the four guys. I totally hear your point, Jonathan. It was almost like they were messing with the, you go to a rock show and you get like the four cameras of like each band member, however many band members are on stage. And they kind of did that, but like also in a very fishy way to be like, we're not like that.
Yeah. And it would be weird if they weren't, you know, like it would be weird if they did that thing. And Trey knows it. And the producers, you know, the people who did the thing, they all know it, or at least got the message in the process because they didn't go with that. And so, yeah, I don't, expectations, I think, met. The only thing that I have as a question mark is, like, I'm not picking up the theme, and I'm happy for somebody to say, you're an idiot. The theme is blah. So in a way that I can go, oh, yeah. But at this point, I ain't got it. And I don't see anybody else calling it out either.
Well, yeah. Okay. So let's get into the music. I did see a couple comments on Instagram about people wanting us to talk about the drones, the drone footage, which seems, yeah. I mean, the whole thing was just outrageous. But let's talk about the music real quick. I think based on Brian, I don't think you were wrong. Like in musically, I think they picked up right where they left off in Mexico, you know?
We got a pretty big jam on Everything's Right. Yeah.
I thought it was great.
And that's like my little quibble I mentioned earlier was that, you know, the very beginning of Everything's Right, like I kind of like the way that, you know, the electronic music they were playing preset kind of faded, but it was in the same key and they came on, they started playing the song. You could tell Mike was not settled in at the beginning. You could see him kind of like talking to somebody and like looking for something for the first like couple minutes, but then pretty quickly he does settle in, and before long, during that same song, you see him rip a huge grin, and that was a nice big version of Everything's Right, not the biggest or whatever, but it was great. And and you could, with that jam, you could tell that we were in for a good one.
What other highlights did you guys have, both from the first set, both visually and musically, if they're different?
I'll pick one from each, and I'll do first set, and I'll throw it to you, John, and then Jonathan, and we can then do second set. Visually, I thought the Carini was really, really cool. It was like Stanley Kubrick meets Dr. Seuss in a really disturbing way. There's that one Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, that like has the one segment about like reaching the dark place and reaching like the place where everyone's just waiting. And like, it's eerie and creepy, but it was like those boxes just like coming at you, and they would get bigger and bigger every time. I cannot imagine what that was like in the venue, because my brother and my wife and I were sitting on the couch watching that, just like every time it would get big and consume the entire stage, we like kind of got freaked out. And it matched Carini in a way that was not so on the nose, but felt very much like a intentional artistic decision that I was totally in for. Musically, from set one, Life Saving Gun. This song fucking rules. This is like, I mean, the song is the Phish equivalent of Pete Crow Armstrong for the Chicago Cubs. Like, you just know we're going to get like a 25-30 minute version this year that is going to blow everyone's brains. And the joy right now is that every time they play it, they get a little more comfortable with it, and they still have that excitement. And every time it's played, it just like, it's a little bit stronger and a little bit more comfortable, and they take a few more chances and risks, and they figure out how much further they can get and then still be able to cap it off, because the ending of the song really rules. I thought that was the highlight of night one in Mexico, and I thought it was the highlight of night one here at the Sphere. Just an awesome, awesome jam that seemed to be right around the time that the sound issues that I think I was hearing in text messages, you could kind of hear, Jonathan, you and I were talking about how loud the snare drum was on the webcast. All that seemed to start to resolve, and the band felt like all the tech challenges of the show have been, we've worked through it, and we're now comfortable, and we're now playing as Phish again.
Yeah, I like the Life Saving Gun. I think that my musical highlight is probably, for the first set, is probably Wolf Bands, and it's close. So like not an argument. You're not getting an argument from me, but I think I feel like the Wolf Bands just it gets out. It's a nice type two without going 25 minutes, which some would say, but it didn't go 25 minutes. It's Wolf Bands.
We're
dude.
Two for Wolf two. Bands, as Wolf you, Bands in cheer.
Exactly. I was just going to say, as you pointed out in our text last night, is running strong this year. Somebody here said year of Life Saving Gun. I think it's the year of the wolf. So let's see how that goes. I don't know. Maybe it's not, but I like the two that we've had, and the one last night was terrific. My really visual highlight for set one is probably Leaves. It was serene, beautiful, and they had the actual like drone lantern things that lifted up. And for the first second, I was like, wait, are those real or not? And how great is that, that they can just like make you ask that question? Yeah, I thought that was just gorgeous. It was a beautiful moment in the show.
RJ, what about you? What hit you in set one?
Well, actually, musically, I really loved the Wolfman's Jam. I thought was awesome. Dark, brooding, but then like really powerful kind of build back at the end into the, you know, not like a Bliss Peak, but
great
really
resolution.
Yeah, exactly. For me, like the musical highlight, and maybe it's just because I was like paying the most attention during this, but was Leaves. And I don't think Trey gets enough credit, maybe from us or other people talking about the music, for how well he's playing this year. Like
totally
during the Leaves Jam, it was like so nuanced in terms of how he was like using the effects and the notes together, not overpowering, not overwhelming, but like complimentary of what was going on, really balanced, but like really powerful playing. I thought that this soloing in Leaves was like really noteworthy. And maybe that's because of the, like you said, Jonathan, the visuals sort of like, you know, it all kind of works together. But I thought that part of the set was really amazing. And I'm not like, that's not usually what I would come away from it with, but I thought that was really great.
It spoke to, I got a message this morning from someone posted a thread on Mastodon about the show that I thought was, they were at the show. It was a fair and balanced review. But they specifically shouted out the quieter songs, the ballads. And we got Leaves, Dirt, Farmhouse, and Life Boy. And they spoke about how like, because of the sound in the venue, plus the visuals, the ballads were elevated. And close listeners of this pod will know that we are all ballad lovers here, and that we have really pushed for how great Phish plays their ballads in the 4.0 era, and having them be in a setting where those songs are not just breathers, but actually an addition to the overall show, and they elevate the show in a really strong way, I thought was a really insightful point. And I think to your point about Leaves, like, what just a beautiful recent composition we've gotten from them. And then to add the drone lighting and to add the stars in there, it just had such a great feel midway through the set. Really good, like, balance in that first set.
What about, Jonathan, what about set two? How do you feel about set two?
You know, such a waste of time. I don't know why I stayed. No, it was killer. I thought, you know, sand right out the gate, right? Well, okay. Here we go. And there we did. We went. It was just shy 20 minutes and it was ripping. And yet Josh points out it's Nate Fetterman. I just, in fact, just while you were talking about it, flipped over to Mastodon. I saw, found the thread. The sand rips. I thought the kind of an unnecessary landing, which, you know, they've done so well at these things of late that it was more noticeable to me that one didn't like, no, we're going to go to sand, finish sand. Okay. Finish sand. But then they drop into Tweezer, which I try not to expect anything, but I did not expect it first night. And man, they didn't waste it. The Tweezer gets weird. I was just downstairs listening to it again. And, my son is, on his computer in the next room, he said, "Dad, this music is weird." And I was like, "Yeah, because it's awesome." And it just keeps the set. Like, so they play this 19-minute sand, 25-minute Tweezer. You can hear Trey telegraphing "My Friend" like a minute or two before they actually play "My Friend," which is great. He's doing the little like kind of trill kind of thing, and they play "My Friend," and I'm like, "What's next?" Mike's song? Like, are they really going here already? Like, and then that's when like the first feeling that we were in for, you know, this marathon set was like, wow, I know I'm on the East Coast, but surely it's getting late even out there. And no, Mike's song, great. And this is where I felt, isn't it Mike's song where they brought this visual that was like a landscape that with this crazy, I don't know how to describe the thing that was in the distance that moved and opened up.
Yeah, that was really great.
Like baubles floating above the lake, and it went from day to night, and Life Buoy happened. Life Buoy. Okay. It's not hydrogen, but okay. Yeah. Life Buoy. And, wow. Like what a just, that was, that's my visual highlight. I'll take Tweezer musically. That sequence is my visual highlight. That stuff was amazing and worked really well. And then, oh, Blazon. Okay. Blazon closer. Cool, 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 cool. Fluffhead. Like what? Like, you know, at that point, this set's going over 100 minutes. Like what?
106 minute second set. Come
it's
on.
Not a complaint.
My God.
Maybe that's stunned. The theme. The theme is just like really, really long shows.
Well, all right. Yeah, so I want to ask you guys about that, because I was thinking about that. So obviously, I think Trey hinted at this. I don't think there's ever been like a full confirmation of this. But what my interpretation based on his interviews as well as the production designer's interviews were that they planned these shows out. Like these are set listed shows, because when they start playing a song, the visual cue to go along with that song has to come up at that point in time. I don't think that's just like a random visual cue that's associated with the next song that's playing. So I almost wonder if they run out a set list and we're like, well, we got to play all these songs. Like we can't like end Blazon and then they've got the next visual cues lined up, and who knows if they can just like delete it or move on. I don't know, but it almost felt like they wrote out a set list thinking like, this is what we'll play in a normal Fish show. And then just,
and it just got that long
into the jams, and then it just got very long and they couldn't really do anything about it.
I think that they are writing set lists, but if it works out this way, that they write them and then take the time to jam as opposed to like, we got to hustle through this, get through all these songs, then I'll take it. There's no complaint here.
Because go ahead.
No, well, I would just want to tell you, share that I've told you guys this, I think, but I went to, at the end of March, I went to the Disco Biscuits album release party in New York, where they played their 14 song album. And the first set was two hours and 5 minutes, and they got through six of their 14 songs. I mean, it was like, it ended up being like, I mean, I was there for almost 6 hours, but when you're like, you commit to playing these songs, but you also are like in the groove and having a good time improvising, you know, it's gonna be a long ass show.
Feel to like, that point,
there's two ways to commit, right? You commit, we're gonna play this song. Are we gonna play this song? Or are we gonna play this song? Right.
Yeah.
And are we gonna play all these songs? Or are we gonna play them for real and get where we get?
And, you know. Well, and something seemed to change following the sand, with kind of a little bit of a botched ending, and then like all the songs.
That far to call it that.
Well, but my point is more like, they reined it back in, and part of the first set, they like ended every song with like kind of a cold silence and then started the next song. So the visuals would light up. And I was getting a couple of texts from people who were like, are we not going to get any segues? What's going on with this overall run? From Tweezer into My Friend, that seemed to be where the creativity, like it blended with the visuals, where suddenly there was a bit more freedom. There were clear moments in that Tweezer to end it at like 14 minutes, 17 minutes, 20 minutes, and they just keep extending it and then segue directly into My Friend. And I've got to imagine there was, and this is kind of like my larger overall takeaway. I think last night was probably a really challenging show to play. All this new technology, all this new sound, this new weird setup, the visuals behind them. And I got to imagine it took until midway through. You know, there were stages where they felt comfortable, and then they felt a little bit more comfortable. And I think that by the end of the show, they finally kind of seemed to have their arms around how to actually play this venue. And I would imagine tonight will be a little bit less stressful and a little bit less like kind of buttoned up as parts of last night were.
Yeah, I mean, this is not 1994 Pink Floyd, who have a big visual production and a click track and a schedule, and it is got to be this, and like every night we're going to slot in maybe this song or that song and these two slots, and that is it, and we have a production for those two songs too. Fish has never been that band. I think we are all here because of that, even though I enjoyed that band. like to see Pink Floyd in 1994. That was fun, but it's not, I wouldn't go to see quite as many shows, you know, and they would have been bored. They can't possibly. So I think they're trying to strike the balance between working with production, but also generating music as they go. It's tricky. Yeah. And hopefully they feel more comfortable with it. I mean, I don't think it hurt them at all last night. I'm hoping they just feel more and more comfortable with it as they go through the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, which I'm sure they will. I just wanted Las Vegas' own Justin Bruce. His guess about the theme is the card. What are they called? What are those things called?
The suits.
Suits of a deck of cards. Yeah. Card decks. It's like, what is that? There's a word for it. He said lots of visual elements of spades in Mike's last night. Mike's groove. That's interesting. It's really interesting.
I mean, you know, dirt. We dig dirt with a spade. I don't really know. I need somebody to spell this all out for me. So feel free to hit me up on the internet somewhere, folks.
Do you get a spade in like blackjack? Is everything all right?
Yeah.
Or are you back on the train of the game?
Depends on which one.
Right.
You know, speaking of comments and things, I want to share something I saw, and I think this was in the it was on Instagram. Thundershout, you know, posted. They make great shirts and cool stuff out of Colorado. They posted, you know, about the shows. They're not there. They're like, I'd like to hear from somebody who was there and whatever. And this person wasn't there either, but their comments are, I think, pretty spot on. The highs were highs, and the lows weren't that low. Going completely feral visually is distasteful and frankly dangerous for this fan base. I expect it to get better every night. I love the phrasing of going feral with the visuals. And I think it's about like going hard and like, you know, if you watch the first song, you watch Everything's Right. That all moved pretty slowly. It took shape slowly. And it really wasn't until the last song that things got like, potentially, and I think really intense. And he's not wrong. You could really mess some people up, particularly its first night. People don't quite know what they're in.
Nobody knows how to handle that in there.
Right.
Nobody knows how to. People get really hurt on night one.
Plenty of people who don't know how to handle night one.
Yeah, exactly.
and which leads me to want to just again shout out the visuals in Antelope, because like that had to have been fucking cool.
Well, so that was my visual highlight of set two, and when it started, I was like, I was flossing and brushing my teeth, and I was just like, we're still doing this at like 1:30, like what the hell is going on? And when they started playing Antelope, and before the white lights came up on the screen, I got a text from all of our friend Jeremy Smythe, who said, I want an antelope running through a field at high speed, like giant on the screen. And I was kind of like, I would love for them to just lean into that and just like the whole song is just like an antelope running. But then when those white dots that, you know, spread out came on the screen, it made me think about incorporating Kuroda's light show into this visual, because what happens when they go into the banana, you know, like the big peak out of the intro of Antelope, all white lights around the whole room. And it's those like white spiraling lights that just hang on everywhere. And it's something that they've improved upon at every era of Phish history. That is the same cue. It's the same thing as like when Harry Hood goes Bliss, you get those purple and blue and green lights. It's just like small little cues that make you feel like, this has never changed, even though the technology gets better. And here they are incorporating that exact image into this overall song and then expanding upon it to the point that you feel like you're in a math equation. You feel like you're floating in outer space. You feel like you've just like rubbed your eyes together and like you're just seeing white lights and dots. It was such a cool visual approach there. And it made me think that, I think to your point, that things started a little slow in the first set. They don't need to introduce anyone to the visual elements tonight. Like they can pick up exactly where they left off with what I thought was one of the more mind-bending visual aspects of the overall show.
Okay. So like, I just want to reiterate that we are going to have, we're going to make at least one, if not two of our friends from the pod who are there, come on the recap with us, Matt and Brad. So thanks guys in advance. But, cause I, we gotta hear about some of this from them, but I just want to say
you've been informed.
I think the mics, I like that the use of that, like the tower and the field and the little whatever that was, like I wonder if that is going to come back. Like I wonder if some of these things come back with different orientations, or if it's all like there, because I feel like there's like visual signposts maybe that that come back. But I really like that. I did really like the jam in My Friend, which I felt like was, like you said, Brian, it sort of felt like they were kind of feeling like comfortable, which is cool.
I feel like that's a place, like that particular visual was like, this is a cool place to see a concert, even though we can never go there because it's not real.
Very new agey in a way that
I'm into,
like,
that
you have transcended reality and you have ended it. Like that is what I imagine, you know, the good part of the afterlife would feel like right there. Just like hanging out in that field, fish playing music, this weird thing out in the distance that I've got to go and capture. I don't know. It was great. So I know we have to wrap this up because we all have our lives to get back to, and there's more that we're going to say next week when this is all over and we've all figured out the theme, and whoever figures it out first, just remember you win. We've done a good job here of being both praiseworthy and also critical, but can I be a little bit of a fluff here right now? Just a little bit.
I guess so.
This show has never tolerated that sort of behavior. I don't know why we'd start now.
So last night was April 18th, 2024. Okay. It was 20 years after the end of Vegas 2004. I was thinking a lot this week about that run. I wrote about that for Surrender to the Flow. I wrote about the 20th anniversary, the fanzine that you can find at the Sphere. Also watching Trey's interview, reading about them in the Washington Post. It got me really, really emotional. Like this band, I was at Vegas 04. I am the only person on this podcast who will still stand for set one of night two. Wrongly, but I will still stand for it. But I know that like a lot went wrong at that run. And there's a lot we don't know still, but there's a lot that it led to that was very negative. The fact that we are 20 years later and Trey is calling his band of near 60-year-old men still young, still in the middle of their journey, and they have these opportunities to advance technology in music and advance what it means to experience a live music event and advance what sound sounds like in a concert and what visuals do to a concert. And they can take these like ridiculous creative ideas that they had when they were 19, 20 years old in college and actually make them a reality. It just makes me so happy. It makes me so thankful that we are this deep into Fish history, that they just played Gamehenge, for Christ's sake, for the first time in 30 years to celebrate their 40th anniversary. And they still have more to say, and they still have more to unveil, and they still have new stories to tell. Like we are in just, regardless what your thoughts were about the sound, the jams, how connected the band was, the theme, whatever it may be, the fact that the band has the opportunity to do this is something that we should all be incredibly grateful for and thankful for. And the fact that Trey at this point in time is still as anal and as much of a control freak as he was in his 20s, but like has figured out a way to be healthy so that he can throw all his time and energy into these types of projects, it's just a beautiful thing. That's all I gotta say.
Yep.
I'm gonna let you do that, Brian. Thank you. So guys, we're gonna come back next week with more of the crew to talk about the whole run. But anything else you guys want to say before we wrap it up?
I can't wait for tonight. I'm gonna drink some coffee before the show.
I'm gonna go take a nap.
everyone's tired. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. Thank you, Jonathan, for coming on and for coming on, even though you stayed up basically all night, as far as I'm concerned. You know, you're doing it for the cause, which I appreciate.
I'm committed, or I should be.
All right, we're going to be back. We don't know when we're going to be back, but we're going to be back next week sometime, and it's going to be awesome. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for tuning in. We had a great crowd, as always. Lots of great comments, and thanks for listening and watching. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Osiris.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.